This morning's reading is from Proverbs 8, reading verses 1 to 4 and then 22 to 36. Hear how wisdom calls, and understanding lifts her voice. She takes her stand at the crossroads, by the wayside, at the top of the hill, beside the gate, at the entrance to the city, at the approach by the portals. She cries aloud, "It is to you I call, to all humanity I appeal. The Lord created me, the first of his works, long ago, before all else was made. I was formed in the earliest times, at the beginning, before earth itself. I was born when there was yet no ocean, when there were no springs brimming with water. Before the mountains had been shaped, before the hills I was born. When as yet he had made neither land nor streams, nor the mass of the earth's soil. When he set the heavens in place, I was there. When he girdled the ocean with the horizon. When he fixed the canopy of the clouds overhead and confined the springs of the deep. When he prescribed limits for the sea so that the waters do not transgress his command, and when he made earth's foundations firm. Then I was at his side each day, his darling and delight, playing in his presence continually, playing over his whole world, while my delight was in the whole human race." And this is the word of the Lord. Thanks be to God. The gospel reading is from John 16, verses 12 to 15. "There is much more that I could say to you, but you cannot bear it now. However, when the Spirit of truth comes, he will guide you into all truth. For he will not speak on his own authority, but will speak only what he hears. And he will make known to you what is to come. He will glorify me, for he will draw on my truth and reveal it to you. All that the Father possesses is also mine. That is why I said that he will draw on my truth and will show it to you." The Gospel of the Lord. Praise be to you, Jesus Christ.
I've been musing much lately on the commission in the Gospel according to John, where the resurrected Jesus breathes the Holy Spirit into fearful disciples. We mentioned this particular text last week. And when Jesus breathes the Holy Spirit into the disciples, he commissions them. He sends them. He sends them out into the world, as he says in the high priestly prayer, to be with him in the world. But to do what? To forgive sins. That's the commission. And unless that's done, then people won't know that they're forgiven. Indeed, they may continue to live in an unreconciled state. The task of forgiving sins, of course, is the same as to bring reconciliation. And it strikes me just how central reconciliation is, as those who are called to be, commissioned to be, agents of reconciliation. Now, friends, today I'm going to try and do the impossible. I'm going to merge a witness to the Trinity, which is Trinity Sunday today, with our challenge to be agents of reconciliation, particularly with our Aboriginal sisters and brothers. Now, I'm being a little presumptuous here. Last week I got it wrong. I thought this Sunday was Reconciliation Sunday. It's not. Next Sunday is actually Reconciliation Sunday, but Reconciliation Week begins, I think, on Wednesday on the 26th, which is Sorry Day. And so Jenny Swanbury will be furthering this topic with you next Sunday, which is the Reconciliation Sunday. But we're anticipating some of that. Now, there are soft and hard meanings to the word reconciliation. By soft, it's usually that people can put differences aside and live peaceably together. They can get on after a spat and they can live with their differences and their diversity. That's the soft meaning. You kind of lay it aside, say, well, we're not going to let that stop us being a community together. But there's a hard meaning to reconciliation. Why hard? Because hard, hurtful truths which tear people apart have to be named. And that which was kept hidden has to be flushed out. Hard reconciliation is to do with those times when it's clear that power has been exercised over others and people have been oppressed or demeaned and the humanity of other people has been diminished. Hard reconciliation is to do with when the pain of the gulf of separation clearly needs to be healed. Hard reconciliation has to do with relationships which were once broken are then restored through forgiveness. But of course it's a painful process that leads people to know that they are received. And then reparation makeup has to occur. Justice is done. That slide that you see there of course is of Mandela. But it's there, it's a kind of a montage representing the truth and reconciliation process that took place in South Africa, where people came out and confronted each other, people who were advocates and rulers in South Africa with what was known as apartheid, met with the black people of South Africa who'd been hurt by that system, and they confronted each other, endeavouring to have reconciliation. And it was painful, but it worked. It worked in so far, it wasn't perfect, but it worked in so far that South Africa was able to claim to be a nation, a rainbow nation. Now back to the Trinity, and you'll be pleased to know, I'm not really going to talk about the doctrinal Trinity so much. When I talk about the Trinity, I call it as a template of deciding which reality you will live in. Which reality is going to be uppermost in your life? For us, as Christians, we're aware of the reality of the final mystery that we call God. As the scheme of things, as the one who was not just the creator, but the one whose ultimate nature is love, and one that can be called Father. That's first of all an awareness of a reality. Secondly, then being aware of the event which wakens us to the fullness of the reality of the nature of God, the being of God as the God of love, which of course is that which happened, the event which happened in Jesus of Nazareth, who lives out and calls people to live within the reality of the God who loves every human being equally. And so we're awakened with the word that Jesus brings that frees us for abundant living. And then the third thing is, we then live in what we call a social ordering, where we as the people who know that God is love and God has touched our lives, we order our society, we order our community. We are the people of the church who are the people of God, the body of Christ, if you will, and of course what binds us together is the compassionate love of God in Jesus Christ. We live in a community that reflects the reality of the nature of the God who loves. We are ordered as the, we're bound together as the graceful community in which the spirit of wholeness, mutuality and reconciliation is our guide. But you see this, there can be other realities. Now I'm going to take a bit of a long bow here, and I apologise if this is going to be hopefully not too obscure. But let's have the next slide. This is a different reality. It may have been some people a new reality. The reality of evolution, of natural selection. You might say in one sense it was always there, but it took a while for there to be an awareness that life on this earth developed and became more and more complicated by this process known as evolution. And then, so you have an awareness of a reality, but then it took a particular person in history, that Charles Darwin figure there, it took him to uncover what he called, first of all, his theory of evolution, and his word and his text was, you might say, his Bible was called The Origin of the Species. And that's where he spells out a yes to the reality of evolution. Now, not everybody agreed with him. It was such a startling new thing that it really upset many people, particularly a lot of religious people. But there was an awakening amongst the scientific community, yes, that this is something that is reality. And then thirdly, you would say he had his followers. Followers of his theory, and they went into proving that it was real. And they came up, many of his followers, they came up with this idea of the survival of the fittest. And do you know what they did? So they applied that idea to human society. That human societies merge with each other, they struggle with each other, and of course there are those that you might want to say that come to the top. And of course, people who did this who thought they'd come to the top were of course we white Anglo-British people in particular, of course, you know, and other people, particularly so-called primitive people, so that when there was settlement in this land, people looked at the Aboriginal people and thought, oh, they're definitely like a lower order of in the scale of the species of human people. And so social Darwinism supported the idea that white civilization was superior to those we call savages. And that had its own spirit, if you like, its own way of setting what the values were. And some human beings were like more valuable than others. And so you have this Trinitarian template, an awareness of a reality, number one, and then secondly, an event which brings to light, which awakens people to what that reality is. And then you thirdly, you have a social ordering, an application, if you like, which can also include binding people together with a set of shared values. So, given this long bow, let's ask again, which reality do we adhere to or live in? Well, firstly, we dare to face the reality that we both live in the tension of being created mortal beings, and that's always a struggle. I told a story this morning, and I'm going to make this a long sermon if I don't abbreviate a little bit, but I went to Queensland 2 years ago for the first time, and they took me out on a boat to the Barrier Reef. And they thought I was an old man, so they called me Grandpa. Everybody else was young. And I put on this suit, kind of a rubbery thing. I shouldn't never have done it because, you know, I knew how to swim and I'm pretty buoyant. Anyway, I put it on. And then they said, you've got to have this floaty thing under your arm, you know, so keep you floating. And I said, well, I didn't really need it. And they pushed me over the edge, had my flippers on. But there was a little current. And you know what it did? It moved me under the boat. And I had this floaty thing. And I could not move. The people who were on the boat who were running the show, they didn't know that I'd disappeared. They thought I'd gone off somewhere. And I tell you what, I almost drowned. I almost died. And I don't know, there must have been just that enough energy in me to kind of, my family's on the other side of the boat. I came up and gasped for air and, the relief that I had survived. Suddenly, my life felt so precious to me. Suddenly, I was filled with gratitude that I was alive. But I come to that close to not being here today. And that was a moment in which I experienced the mystery of being alive, and at the same time a sense that being alive is precious. So it's those moments when we're close to mortality sometimes that we particularly are aware of the mystery. But the mystery that we name God is still the one that somehow gives that sense that life is precious. We know that we are loved. But naming the realities are not easy. Let's come back to Indigenous, the relationship between Indigenous people in this land and non-Indigenous people. Reconciliation between us is, let's have the next slide. It means confronting and naming realities, some of which we would prefer not to face. Quite often we have an unwillingness in our country to genuinely listen and understand the history and the real situation which Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islanders face. Reconciliation can't happen without facing these realities. And the sad thing is that, in my view, the so-called Northern Territory intervention program of our governments is a great barrier to reconciliation because of how it was implemented. Yes, there was a crisis with the safety of children, but do you send in the army? Can you imagine? Has there been any other time in Australian history when you send in the army to solve the problem? No wonder many Aboriginal people fled when they came. Yes, as I said, there is an issue to do with the welfare of children. But to tag every Indigenous community, and I'm talking here particularly about what we call the remote and traditional Aboriginal communities, to tag every one of them as harbouring paedophiles was regarded as an insult. As if one size fits all as a solution, it just doesn't work. And you'll be interested to know, our Northern Synod in the Uniting Church have condemned this policy. And yet, I don't think one person has actually been charged, even now. And some saw it as an excuse to strip Aboriginal communities of their rights. For reconciliation to happen, there has to be a genuine dialogue between all the parties. That did not take place in this instance, and that need for dialogue remains an enormous challenge. And yet, ironically, there is a much wider recognition within the wider Australian community of the rich cultural heritage of Aboriginal peoples, and that's certainly been so since 1994, when the government instituted what was known as the Reconciliation Program. There have been some great steps. I'm going to illustrate from my own experience. As I mentioned, Janine and I lived with the Mianjin community in the early 70s. They are the custodians of a rich and ancient creation mythology. These are paintings of the creator spirits known as the Wandjina. And I might actually say that actual painting was in the office of the Mianjin community when we first arrived, and I think it was sold for a pittance. It's now in the National Gallery of Victoria. What do you see when you look at that picture, though? Look at it for a moment. It's meant to depict, with these mythological creator beings, the destructive and life-giving forces of nature. Every year, after the dry, the rains would come. And they would come so fiercely that it would seem that in fact a lot of destruction happens. Plants and animals. But of course, after the rains, life blossoms forth as you can never believe. And they also said, though, that these ancestor beings, what do you notice? What's lacking? A mouth. There's no mouth. Why is that? Well, it's their way of saying there's mystery here, and we can't finally paint all of the mystery. The mystery can never be defined. Hence, it has no mouth. It's not unlike Moses meeting the mystery on the mountain. He wasn't able to say the name of God. It's a bit like that's how you depict that. Now, these stories are remarkable in acknowledging, as I said, the passing awayness of all things and the continual regeneration of life. Life which is precious. Life which is good. Now, let's show the next picture. This was the old Mayanjum church, and three Wandjinas were painted in the church. But they said, we don't have the caves around where we live. Our sacred place is the church. And down the one end you had the communion table and the pulpit and the cross. And at the back of the church you had their own heritage painted, their own great stories which gave rise to their deep spirituality. And when those Wandjinas were painted on the church, back of the church, it's a bit like saying the whole spirit of the community rose and they worked together as one. They kind of sensed that there was an acceptance of being who they were. And I think that community now, these days, has become a great centre of art and heritage. In fact, the next picture shows an outcome. That painting is a Wandjina figure painted by Donnie Woolagudja, whom I knew as a young man. That was for the opening of the Olympic Games. Isn't that wonderful? And so, then let's move in this rather confused way in which I'm doing things, though, is that there are the realities that we have to come to terms with and name. That's the first challenge. The second challenge, though, is to recognise there's a meaningful word that delivers life. Reconciliation requires acceptance of our common humanity and our belief that people can change. Sadly, racism still runs deep in our society. I think the Adam Goods affair, was that last year or the year before? It was last year, wasn't it? When this remarkable, gracious footballer, Adam Goods, whose history, by the way, is closely woven into the history of South Australia. One of his white forebears is the statue sitting outside the University of Adelaide. But we won't go into... If you ever follow the story, Who Do You Think You Are? See if you can look up the one for Adam Goods. But the way in which he was abused was just horrific. And yet the idea that being black means that you're a lesser person can actually be internalised by Aboriginal people themselves. I can remember when we were working in the Mayanjum, we decided it was time for the Mayanjum people to take place in the annual Derby Boab Festival, which was mainly white people. And of the Kimberleys who took part in that festival. And so all the Mayanjum kids were great at singing. And so they were all neatly dressed up and they were there waving their banners. And they were supposed to sing their great songs that they practiced. It was a mixture of traditional and kind of folky music that they'd picked up as well. But they didn't sing. And I can remember saying to one bright spark, young Marshall Morleman, I said, what's the problem? Why aren't you singing? And he said, big shame. Big shame. And I was shocked. because what he was saying, that he felt that being black meant that he was a lesser human being. Big shame just for being black and Aboriginal. And yet that's typical of all who have a negative self-image. It leads to what you call the victim image. And if the gospel means anything, it means that there is a word, there is an experience that gives rise to the fact that people know that they are precious, irrespective of history or whatever, or what the past might be, no matter what their circumstances are. And when the Reverend J.B. Love first, the great missioner with these people, was with them, when they first heard the good news of the gospel, they said, "Now Wanjana has a mouth." Can you see how they integrated? This precious, this Jesus story became special to them because it made clear that they were precious, which of course would mean that eventually, if that understanding, that experience gets lodged in people's being, in their psyche, then they wouldn't say big shame, but black is beautiful. And for all that, I think we have to say there's an upside, because we now have seen some magnificent Indigenous leaders arise who are full of a sense of dignity for being who they are as Aboriginal. They're proud to be black and they live with dignity. We can name some of them: Pat and Mick Dodson and Loitch O'Donoghue. And recently, have you heard some of the speeches of Stan Grant, one which recently just went viral all around the world? And we have in our own church connections great Congress leaders. You can probably name them. So thank God for Aboriginal people who are proud to be black, who can affirm their unique identity, and who offer positive role models for all. And so, friends, reconciliation then is grounded in a meaningful event word that declares the radicality that God loves everyone, that people can be affirmed for who they are and liberated. And of course, one has to mention what was known as the apology that happened not so many years ago, delivered by the then Prime Minister Kevin Rudd. The apology to the stolen generations, because there, I think, there was a recognition of policies. Some thought they were right even at the time. They thought they could be justified. But policies which nevertheless were based on demeaning the humanity of Aboriginal peoples. Such recognition of such realities opens the door to saying sorry, which is then followed by a journey of healing. And so reconciliation is grounded in a word which affirms people's humanity as precious and thus sets them free. And then thirdly, the social ordering. And I'm going to abbreviate this a little bit here. But social ordering means that if we live out of the reality that we're all loved by a gracious God, then it reflects that we then seek to live as reconciled peoples. Reconciliation requires not just healing hurts, but building a just and equitable society. And I think I want to say two things. We in the Uniting Church, one about the Uniting Church, first, and then something about our nation. No other church in Australia has made the space we have made in the Uniting Church for Indigenous people that we have, to express their voice, to minister to their own people, and to give witness to the conclusive reality of the gospel of Christ. I think this is a positive example of social ordering, which our church can truly celebrate. Now, it can be a real struggle, There's no point pretending otherwise. If you've been to one of the assemblies, or if you go to the Northern Synod, where you've got two presbyteries, one primarily Indigenous and one primarily non-Indigenous, you know that there's always working out to happen. But the relationship between the Congress and the rest of the United Church is constantly having to be affirmed. Now I'm going to ask a question. Is Moriata a covenanting congregation? Maybe not. I think you'd know if you were. Bruce says yes. You are. In other words, somewhere along the line, you've made a decision here to be specifically related and supported of the Uniting and Aboriginal Christian Congress. Good on you. Maybe it can still be worked on a bit. Okay. But the other thing, and I'll conclude on this point, there's a movement to recognise Indigenous peoples in the Australian Constitution, which makes it clear that the referendum of 1967 did not intend that there should be laws made that adversely affected Aboriginal people. Because that's how it's turned out. That giving the Commonwealth government the power to legislate for Aboriginal people means it doesn't have to be for their benefit. It may not be. And of course, that's one of the things that justifies the Northern Territory intervention. And of course, that we have in our constitution as a nation clauses that are clearly racist. And I'm just going to quote George Williams, Professor of Law at the University of New South Wales. He says, Australia needs to recognise Aborigines in the Constitution. It doesn't speak well of our nation that after more than a century we have yet to achieve this and have not removed the last elements of racial discrimination from the document. It's past time that we had a Constitution founded upon equality and recognises our Indigenous history with pride. I'm quite conscious that I haven't directly addressed reconciliation as it might apply to you in your daily lives. Although hopefully my long bow may have touched you personally. For friends, we accord to live in the reality of this created order, with this promise that that ultimate being is sheer mystery and loving. We are invited to be reaffirmed by the word of grace in Jesus Christ and to be the graceful community. And we are all charged with the ministry of reconciliation. As Jesus said, as the Father has sent me, so I send you.